Don't Move a Muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello, and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I am your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
Okay, yep. And we are back after a while.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
Yeah, a month or two.
No, yeah. we missed like a week or two. We're very sorry for that.
Yeah. What actually happened is we started a podcast before our senior year of college.
It's been a little busy.
Which was a dumb idea. And when we did it, I remember we were like, oh, yeah, it'll be fine. Like, we'll make time for it. We'll bank episodes and it'll be okay. But it wasn't. So that's the elephant in the room, I guess.
Unless you're only just starting now. And if that's the case, you've started at a great time.
Yeah.
Because hopefully we'll keep taking.
Or when we're famous and people are like, wow, I got to get in on Podtrificus Totalis. And they go back and listen to all these episodes. They're all already there. So nobody will actually know. So
yeah, there's no gap if you're in the future.
But yeah, we're back and we're going to try to be better now.
No promises.
We're going to bank episodes. And I'm also currently minorly employed. So we'll be better. But anyway, we're back to do chapter 9, The Midnight Duel, which we promised we would do like a year ago. And we'll start with the summary by Joe.
Okay. Well, I'd like to preface this with,
we forgot who was supposed to do the summary.
Yeah, we did have to re-listen to the podcast to find out. But this is the summary I wrote down last year. So I think I'm going to read it verbatim. I promise I reread the chapter.
Yeah, we both did. And we just kind of merged our notes.
I wrote nothing new. Okay. Neville gets a Remember-All from his gran. Malfoy tries to take it, but McGonagall makes him give it back. Gryffindor and Slytherin have flying lessons. Neville gets hurt. Malfoy takes the Remember-All again. And Harry chases him on a broom. Malfoy throws it, and Harry dives to catch it. McGonagall sees him and decides he should be a seeker and introduces him to Oliver Wood. Malfoy challenges Harry to a duel at midnight. Ron comes as Harry's second. Hermione comes out of a failed attempt to stop them. And Neville comes out of sheer bad luck. Malfoy doesn't show up. Instead, he told Filch, who chases them. They wind up in the forbidden third floor corridor and face to face with a giant three-headed dog who Hermione notices is guarding a trap door. They escape and make it back to their dorms. And Harry thinks the package Hagrid took was under the trap door.
Your summaries are so long and unnecessarily detailed.
This is a reasonable summary.
Okay. Anyway.
These are the important things.
Uh-huh. Sure. Okay. So in this chapter, I think this is the first time we've ever had Quidditch mentioned. It's not actually played, but I think this is the first time the word Quidditch appears.
I can check right now.
It's super not necessary.
But I'm going to. Right. I don't want you to be lying.
Okay. Yeah. Imagine if somebody got on a podcast and started saying lies.
That's never happened
because
before.
They read things out of a book.
It's mentioned in Diagon Alley, Chapter 5.
Yep. That would make sense because they're looking at the like broomstick. And
it's mentioned in Sorting Hat.
Quality Quidditch supplies. All right. Whatever. Well, this is the first time Quidditch is like important in the book.
I don't know. It's going to.
It's going to be more important later, but this is the preface to Quidditch. Anyway, I Googled Quidditch to dig up some juicy trivia for the podcast, and Google suggested Quidditch fidget spinners.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, which I don't even know what that would look like.
You didn't click on the link?
Of course I did not.
Well, you're missing out. I'm sure it was just a snitch.
Okay, well, that's what you'll get for your birthday this year.
Okay.
You can do some fidget spinner tricks. Anyway, so actual juicy trivia about Quidditch. J.K. Rowling, in coming up with the name Quidditch, wrote 5 pages of words starting with the letter Q.
Why Q?
I don't know. It's a nice shaped letter.
Okay. The capital Q is what it looks like when the quaffle goes in through.
Yeah, that's probably why. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Quaffle was on that page.
That's a great question.
Or one of those pages.
It's not quite the one I'm looking for, but I want to use it anyway.
Yeah. So I wonder what the decision was like, where it's like, I know it has to be a Q word and I'm going to write 5 pages of Q words. But yeah, so apparently she just wrote 5 pages of words starting with Q and said Quidditch is the best one. A reporter eventually suggested to her that it or when talking to her about Quidditch, suggested that it derived from quiddity, which means the inherent nature or essence of a thing. Rowling said she was inclined to agree because it sounded so much more intellectual than what actually happened.
Than throwing a dartboard at a sheet full of words.
Yes, throwing a dartboard. The entire thing.
Yeah, the whole
thing.
Dartboard. Yes. And, you know, the darts that fell out.
Yes, which I mean, I think that's a very charming story. You know, like, as much as I get into the etymology of all the words in Harry Potter, I like that some of them were just like, meh. I thought it sounded cool. Mm-hmm. So that's how she came up with the word Quidditch. As far as mapping out the actual game itself, which I know we don't see the actual game performed here, but we get to know like what a seeker is and some of the very basic mechanics.
Should we wait on that? Because I feel like there's a whole chapter just kind of dedicated to...
I wrote this paragraph and I'm going to read it because I spent the time to handwrite it.
Okay, but you can look back at the paragraph later.
No.
I feel like next chapter...
Quidditch was invented in a small hotel in Manchester after a row with my then boyfriend. This is in Rowling's words, not mine. After a row
with... Oh, you didn't invent Quidditch?
No, I didn't. With her then boyfriend. She says, I had been pondering the things that hold a society together, cause it to congregate and signify its particular character, and knew I needed a sport. It, as in Quidditch, infuriates men. They ask her things like, why is the snitch so valuable? Which is quite satisfying to J.K. Rowling, given the state of mind that she was in when she invented it, being mad at her boyfriend. She said that in her annotations of the book. And so, Joe, on behalf of all men, do you find Quidditch infuriating?
No, but
as a representative of all men.
Yeah, I am main speaker of men.
The alpha male, if you will.
Yes.
Is Quidditch infuriating?
No, it's pretty entertaining. I would never play the college version of it.
I actually think that Quidditch is a little boring. Like, I really respect why she put it in there.
But do you like any sports?
Hockey and do you watch badminton. Hockey? I've watched hockey. Hockey is more fun when you go to an actual game. Mm-hmm. When you watch it on TV, it like removes a lot of the excitement because you don't get to hear like the loud thud when people push each other against the glass.
All right. I've never gotten to go to a hockey game.
Oh, we should go to a hockey game. Anyway, I think that Quidditch is a little boring in the books. I think that Rowling's writing is at her weakest when she writes about Quidditch, which, you know, whenever I throw shade on Rowling's writing, it's always with a disclaimer of she is doing way better than I ever could. But I think that the way she writes Quidditch, which we'll see in future chapters, is just a little...
I mean, that's the that's an appropriate way to look at it, considering we're talking about a sport, because
every sport is boring.
Every sportcaster talks about, this professional athlete should have done this instead of that. Meanwhile, the person talking about it probably couldn't do half of what the person on the field is doing.
I see your analogy there. Okay. But we'll see it in future chapters and I'll go into more detail. But I like her reasons for inventing Quidditch. I think it's a example of some good world building that she does for the
universe.
Yeah,
I feel like a sport is necessary. It's just something to rally behind.
Yes, yeah. And it does become a larger plot point later on throughout the books. And it's kind of a recurring thing. I'm really happy that Quidditch is there. And I'm excited that it is introduced now because it does create some excitement and interesting plot points going on from here. So that's all I'll say about Quidditch now.
The other sport that's mentioned is one that does exist.
Soccer. Which I find it interesting. This might be another thing with the translation of the books that they change. Obviously, Sorcerer's Stone is changed from Philosopher's Stone, but they do, in the version that we read, say soccer. And I assume it was football in the original publishing.
I would have to assume so.
Yeah.
But I honestly have no idea.
Yeah, probably.
But I bring that up simply to point out how Ron, while the Muggleborn students are coming in with no idea of what the magic world is like, mm-hmm. Ron is coming here with no idea what Muggle world is like.
Yeah, he's like, what's the fun? They're not flying. There's only one ball.
Yeah, and on top of that, he even gets caught poking Dean's poster, Dean's soccer poster, to try and get the people on it to move around.
Yeah. So again, it creates like this charming little world building of emphasizing the difference between the Muggle-born students and the wizard world kids like Ron, who grew up in this world. So Quidditch altogether, I'm happy it's there. I like the little plot points and development that it creates.
Yeah, I like Quidditch.
Yeah. So moving on through the actual chapter, Malfoy is awful in this chapter. Like, he's
just in this chapter.
He's awful all the time, but this chapter reaches new heights. So when they learn that they're having flying lessons with the Slytherins, Malfoy complains loudly about first years never getting on the house teams and tells long, boastful stories that always seem to end with him narrowly escaping muggles in helicopters. Which, I mean, Ron and Seamus kind of jump on that and tell their own stories, which I think is just them kind of trying to flex on the, like, muggle-born kids and Malfoy. But Malfoy's is by far the most extravagant.
And it's clear that they're not true.
I mean, I think that Seamus just says, like, oh, I spend my childhood, you know, flying around the countryside, which could very well be true. And
yeah, no, I'm saying Malfoy's definitely aren't. He's not being chased by helicopters. I mean, Ron's
has something to do with, like, a hang glider. Like, I almost flew into a muggle on a hang glider, which could happen, but very easily outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
And that would happen to him multiple times, like helicopters plural. It's just absurd. Oh, and Malfoy also mocks Harry for not receiving mail from his family. And he steals Neville's remember all, which you talked about. But he steals it when Neville first gets it, and then he steals it again later.
Yes.
So all around, Malfoy is
wants that remember all.
He is a little punk, honestly. Like, that nobody has punched him in the face yet is frankly shocking.
Give it a couple books.
Yeah. Yeah. But Rowling herself has even said that she is surprised at the fan reaction to Malfoy, because, of course, the fandom loves Malfoy in kind of a general sense. You know, there's all of the dreary fan fiction, and he's like this emo hero, basically. And she has said, like, he's terrible. Like, why do people like him so much? And she thinks it's partly because Tom Felton is, you know, an attractive young man.
Gorgeous, yes.
Yeah. Well, the hairline thing is a little unattractive, but
just bad luck.
I feel so bad for him, but he really is terrible. Like, I can't blame her for being surprised, because he is so unlikable in the books.
Did the dreary fan fiction not start until after the movie started coming out?
I don't know. I was young when these books came out, like too young to track the appearance of dreary fan fiction.
Okay.
But I
feel like it would be kind of worse if it started when the movies came out, because now they're looking at an 11-year-old boy and saying, oh yeah, I like dreary. I mean, like Draco now.
Just knowing the nature of fandom and fan communities and fan fiction in particular, fandom as we know it really started with Star Trek in the 60s. And of course, the fan fiction was about Kirk and Spock. So that dreary would be there, like, from the very beginning would not surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he is a nightmare in this chapter. Like, I hate Malfoy so much in this chapter. He's horrible.
Yeah, so he brags about getting mail and then steals the one decent piece of mail that a Gryffindor gets.
I know. And, like, he just happens to be walking by the Gryffindor table. Like, what?
He went out of his way to walk by
I'm sure
the
he
Gryffindor
did, which
table.
I'm not going to get into the layout of the Great Hall again. But
I've tried to map it out. It seems to change every year.
Yeah, it's impossible. But so he takes Neville's remember all, and McGonagall is walking by and she's just like, give that back. And he's like, I was just looking, like a little brat. So they go to flying lessons, and we are introduced to Madam Hooch.
Brilliant woman. I love her.
I do love Madam Hooch, especially her in the movie. Like, she just has such a cool look. Her Lego figure is so cool, too. It's got this, like, cool cape and, like, neat outfit. I really like her Lego figure. Madam Hooch is awesome. I really like her. Interestingly, though, like, why is she Madam? The only other person I can think of that's a Madam is Madam Pomfrey, but she's not, like, a professor. Pomfrey?
Yeah. I have no idea. Is Madam Hooch a professor?
I mean, she teaches flying lessons, but I think most of her job is like coordinating Quidditch and being the referee. So I guess that could have something to do with it.
Yeah. So maybe she's not technically a professor. She's kind of like the gym teacher almost.
The gym teacher is still a professor in a way.
You wouldn't call them a professor.
Would you call them like coach? Is it like Coach Hooch?
I don't like the sound of that.
Okay. Well, whatever. Hooch is an interesting decision for her surname, though, because that is usually alcohol brewed at home or in a prison toilet.
Interesting.
Yeah, I couldn't find any details on like why J.K. Rowling selected that and if it had other meanings, but that is what I feel most people associate with the word hooch.
I think it just sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it does sound cool.
What is her first name?
There's a little bit of controversy about that. So it's listed as Rolanda on the Harry Potter wiki, but apparently before the first movie came out, it was Shiomara on IMDb. Which IMDb can be edited by anyone, and I couldn't find any other like source for that, but it's either Rolanda or Shiomara.
So it's never mentioned in the books.
I don't believe so. She does not appear again in any of the movies after the first movie. The actress only signed on for the first movie, and she's like, yeah, they never asked me to come back.
That's even so though weird, because totally she's supposed have. To be the referee throughout the whole
series.
Yeah,
she's present throughout the books, but I think she is only referred to as Madame Hooch. I don't think her first name is ever mentioned in the books.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
Because I thought I saw it as Rolanda.
Rolanda sounded right to me, but we'll see.
But so it was briefly in an IMDb page,
yeah,
a different
and
name?
Like I said, like anybody can edit IMDb. It's like Wikipedia, so it's not necessarily right, but it's weird that it would be on there like that. You know, like where
it could
did that
have been
come from?
Whoever wrote the screen adaptation.
And it was like a casting
that,
thing, maybe.
And then someone
Rowling corrected
them.
Maybe. That's true. But did Rowling write the screenplay for the first movie?
I don't believe so. I thought it was that same guy.
Chris Columbus?
Yes.
We'll get to it when we do our movie episode.
Yeah.
So Madame Hooch is the flying teacher. She like instructs them on how to pick up the broom and everything. And Neville messes up. Not for the first time.
It is before he gets near the brooms. Mm-hmm. We learn that Neville had never been near a broom because his grandma was afraid he would hurt himself.
Understandable.
And the first time he's next to a broom.
Yes.
He breaks his wrist.
Yeah. I mean, this is a good lesson in protecting your children and perhaps sheltering your children, that if you want them to not be hurt, it is not smart to avoid the thing that will hurt them, but rather teach them how to use things safely.
On the other hand, the woman whose job it was to teach him how to use it safely.
True. It just kind of stands
right
on
there.
The ground and is like, uh-oh, what do we do? Although
it did happen very fast. There wasn't a lot you could do.
She is much nicer than Snape when Neville gets hurt, because I don't know if you remember, but a year ago when we read chapter 8 and Neville's cauldron like explodes or something, Neville is just kind of like, you dumb idiot. And, like, doesn't help him. And,
oh, Professor Snape?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Whereas Madame Hooch is nice to Neville and takes him to the hospital wing and puts her arm around him. So it's an interesting contrast there that's created between the two teachers, I think.
I feel like Snape just kind of stands away from every other professor.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yes. No other.
So I wouldn't necessarily call that like a contrast between these two specifically.
Well, just because it's one chapter to the next.
True.
You know, and both chapters have Neville messes up something in class. Professors react.
True.
Which sounds like the title of a YouTube video. Professors to react to Neville screwing up. Yes. So Madame Hooch takes Neville away to the hospital wing, and in the process, Neville drops his Remember All and Draco takes it. Oh, I forgot to mention. Oh, before they even get to the flying lessons, Hermione bores everyone with flying tips she got out of Quidditch through the ages.
Yes, she was trying to study up.
She's the worst. Anyway, so Draco takes the Remember All and challenges Harry. I don't know.
Well, the first person actually to say anything is Parvati Patil, who I always pronounced Pavarti. So trying to find her name was a little inconvenient.
Parvati Patil.
But I was always thinking it was Pavarti.
Pavarti. Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
So I was putting the R in the wrong place.
Yeah.
And
we're dumb white people, so.
Yeah. So as soon as Neville and Madame Hooch are out of earshot, Malfoy starts making fun of Neville, and Pavarti tells Malfoy to shut up. So it's nice to see someone other than Harry standing up to Malfoy.
Yeah, because Malfoy just kind of like tramps around like a little jerk, and Harry and Ron are really the only ones ever to say anything about it. So I'm glad that the other kids get a little bit of a role in this chapter. So Pavarti.
Yeah. So since this is the first time we're hearing her first name, we heard Patil and Patil in chapter 5, I believe.
The Sorting Hat
one.
I don't remember what number it was.
I think it was 5.
Okay.
But so she has a twin sister who...
Padma,
but we don't know about her yet.
No, I don't think she really like appears until the fourth book in any capacity.
That's very possible.
Yeah.
She's not in Gryffindor.
She's
Ravenclaw. Mm-hmm. But Parvati is the name of a Hindu goddess of strength. And that goddess is the consort of Shiva and daughter of the Himalayas, mm-hmm. Who is also renowned for her beauty. Mm-hmm. But another interesting fact and possibly where the twins' names came from.
Yeah, I guess it is possible. The timeline would work out. Yeah.
Yeah, there is a model named Padma Parvati Lakshmi.
Yes, who is in the movie Glitter with Mariah Carey.
Okay, I've never seen that.
It is widely renowned as one of the worst movies ever made.
Yeah, so potentially named after the model, and their original names were Madhari and Mati.
Yes, yeah. So maybe J.K. Rowling saw Glitter and said, I gotta name some characters.
Even when did Glitter come out?
2001, so not possible.
So no.
Yeah, yeah. But that's an interesting choice for Parvati, because, spoiler alert, she doesn't have a huge role in the books ever.
She's got a role, but it's
nothing big.
She's not a main character.
No, she's not. But, you know, to give her a name for strength like that is interesting, I guess. I guess we'll look at Parvati as we read, because she's not a character I've ever thought much about. But we'll see how she appears in the books, because I don't remember too well her role in the smaller things that kind of get glossed over.
Yeah, she's very much just a background character, yeah. But there mm-hmm. are so few Gryffindors that she's got to do something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we'll see how Parvati evolves. But she really just tells Malfoy to quit it. And
she's one of the few that we actually hear standing up to Malfoy, from our main character.
That is a kind of strength, that kind of courage to stand up to Malfoy, who's like this hotshot kid.
Yeah, and she is in Gryffindor for a reason.
Yeah,
so.
True. Mm-hmm. Yeah. After Parvati says her thing, we also hear about Pansy Parkinson, who will be a recurring character as the book goes by. This is the first, as the series goes by, this is the first time she's mentioned. Rowling says of Pansy Parkinson, this is a direct quote, I loathe Pansy Parkinson. I don't love Draco, but I really dislike her. She's every girl who ever teased me in school. She's the anti-Hermione.
I feel like Rowling seems to hate the women in this book more than the men.
is your stance J.K. Rowling is sexist right now?
That seems like the opposite of what... Can you be sexist against yourself?
That's called internalized misogyny.
Okay.
What is your point?
What? So, yeah. So Draco's, she doesn't like Draco, but she loathes Parvati. But she also later has this character, the one in pink.
Umbridge.
Oh, who she thinks is the most evil character.
Yeah.
Like more evil than Lord Voldemort.
I think it's that these other characters like Draco and eventually Voldemort, to an extent, get redeeming qualities about them, or maybe not redeeming qualities, but tragic backstories. Whereas characters like Pansy or Umbridge, they don't get those backstories. You know, they don't have anything good about them.
But so, is that on her? She left them
absolutely.
These black characters.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to look at and say, oh,
yes.
Poor Umbridge.
Yeah. You laugh saying that because it's so ridiculous. Yeah. I think to an extent, maybe that's a flaw in her writing. But I think it's just she imagines she needs a bully character who is a girl to act kind of as a foil to Hermione. I mean, she says literally right there, she's the anti-Hermione, but kind of in the way that Draco is a foil to Harry, she needs somebody to be that kind of combative figure for Hermione.
Because Hermione couldn't stand up to a man.
Not that, but to work as a foil, you know, to work as the opposite of, you know, here are two 11-year-old girls who are magical and everything, but they're just completely different entities. They could easily be a girl and a boy, you know, it doesn't have to be a girl and a girl, but I think it's also J.K. Rowling inserting her own experiences into the book. Hermione very much being a portrait of herself at 11 years old and her saying, like, I need to think about all those girls that bullied me in school. And mm-hmm. she puts that all into Pansy Parkinson. And maybe that's part of it, too, that she doesn't want to give dimension to Pansy because she doesn't want to give dimension to her childhood bullies.
Okay, yeah. True. And besides, if it was just Hermione versus Crabbe and Goyle, you know who would win.
Yes, Hermione.
Oh, yeah.
So then Malfoy takes the Remember-All and Harry is like, hey, give it back. And they get into a little scuffle about it. Why do you think that Harry jumps to Neville's defense there and demands that Malfoy gives back the Remember-All?
He was already ready to do that in the beginning of this chapter.
Yeah.
The first time he's willing to do that, it's stated he's already looking for a fight with Malfoy. Any excuse.
Yeah.
So that's a good chance.
Okay. So you think that it's purely motivated by his conflict with Malfoy?
I feel like that's a big factor, but it could just be a genuine care for Neville.
Yeah.
Who he just witnessed get horribly injured.
It's something I wonder about because we have to think about Harry as this character who's constantly poised as noble and courageous. But when it comes to Malfoy, I think that's when that nobility disappears and when his motives become a little more questionable.
If you put Malfoy as the enemy, then it looks noble no matter what he's doing, no matter the reason behind it.
Yeah, so if you just assume Malfoy evil, Harry good, it always looks noble for Harry to try to stop Malfoy. But in this case, I don't know if his motives are entirely noble. Like, I like to think that it's Harry defending Neville as his friend, Harry defending Neville as kind of the downtrodden kid that's, you know, always getting bullied, and maybe even him thinking about, like, in the context of the mail scene earlier, him saying, like, this is a gift that Neville's grandmother gave him, you know,
potentially.
Don't get between that, but I agree. I think it's probably motivated by just Harry is looking for a fight with Malfoy.
Yeah, and we're getting this series in with a lot of Harry's thoughts.
Yeah,
so knowing that Harry is already planning, like, I need an excuse, and what we see later is Harry no longer has something to stand up for. He Neville already has his remember all back, but he's still looking to fight Malfoy.
Get in a fight with Malfoy. Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting thing. Maybe it is just Harry's very black and white thinking that we see throughout the books of Neville is a bad kid. Malfoy is a bad kid. Malfoy is evil. And I have to do whatever I can to stop him, you know, even if it's unnecessarily picking a fight.
But it just seems like Malfoy was mean to me. Yeah. Malfoy is a jerk.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is very much they're both 11.
Yeah.
They're going to fight each other.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to think about Harry's motives in these situations that ordinarily I think are poised as, like, what a hero Harry is, what a defender of the downtrodden he is, and seeing that that's not really the case all the time. Yeah. So Harry gets the remember all back from Malfoy. Malfoy throws it and Harry catches it before it falls to the ground. And McGonagall storms out, pissed. And McGonagall introduces Harry and the reader to my boyfriend, Oliver Wood, a fifth year.
So that would make him
15.
15. Yep. You are 23.
Okay. He is my boyfriend, Oliver Wood. So McGonagall and my boyfriend Oliver Wood are very excited about Harry's abilities on a broomstick and decide to make him seeker of Gryffindor House.
I love the way it's done because she just kind of drags him away.
Yes, yeah.
With no context, no words exchanged.
Yeah, it's this good tense moment of Harry thinking, like, oh my God, I'm going to be expelled. I guess I can maybe become Hagrid's, like, assistant and watch everybody else learn magic, and I'm just going to carry his bag around. What is she going to do? I'm so worried. And then McGonagall is just like, I found a seeker.
Yeah, so she grabs Wood from class.
Yeah.
She doesn't give Wood any explanation either.
Yeah,
follow her. And as soon as she says, oh, this is our new seeker, they both just start kind of like circling Harry and looking at him, just like judging him on his frame.
Yeah, let's look at his body.
Oh, he's a perfect build for a seeker.
I think it's very sweet because we see McGonagall's soft side here, of course, which is Quidditch. That, you know, as much as we see McGonagall as this very stern figure in Hogwarts, she's the deputy headmistress, she's the head of Gryffindor House, she's very much by the rules, except when it comes to Quidditch.
Would you call that a soft side or willing to bend the rules for her own benefit? Because
depends on who you ask.
She does immediately mention that in the previous year, the Gryffindor team lost horribly to Slytherin.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she couldn't bear looking at Snape for a few weeks.
Yes. What's sweet about it to me is not really that soft side, although I think it is a great facet of McGonagall's character, but that she found someone else as crazy as her in my boyfriend, Oliver Wood.
I mean, he is the captain of the Quidditch team, but how do you know all the Quidditch players aren't as crazy about it?
Because what we learn about my boyfriend, Oliver Wood, later is that he is crazy.
Okay. I can't wait to learn more.
Yes. About my boyfriend, Oliver Wood. So Harry is put on the Quidditch team, but it has to be a secret. Fred and George mention Gregory the Smarmy, who guards one of the secret passageways in Hogwarts. He's a statue.
Guards?
He's a statue. And so he stands in whatever. Okay, yeah. Listen. I actually looked into Gregory the Smarmy today because I've never known anything about him. Smarmy, of course, means kind of insincere and excessively ingratiating. Of course. If you're smarmy, like you're like if you go to a party and you're like always trying to rub elbows with people and like make friends with people who do not care at all about you, but you're trying to like network and just get in with the right people, you know, you're smarmy. That's what a smarmy person is.
Potentially, this smarmy statue is getting the twins to where they want to go.
Well, actually, he invented Gregory's Unctuous Unction, a potion that makes the drinker believe that whoever gave them the potion is their best friend.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I thought
that seems
cute.
Appropriate.
Yeah. That's a little bit there.
That's probably how you get a statue made of you.
Yes.
Give a lot of people a potion.
Yes. So Fred and George go by and say, like, hey, congrats on getting on the team. And then Malfoy comes by real mad.
Well, not mad yet. He's expecting Harry to be expelled at this point. Mm-hmm. So he's looking to rub it in his face before he leaves.
Yes.
But Harry gets to say, nope, I'm still here.
Yes. And then Malfoy challenges him to a duel.
Although he doesn't explicitly say, oh, I'm still here. Just that I'm willing to fight you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Ron dials it up to 11 here. Jumps in and says, I'm his second, which we later learn means that if Harry dies, Ron takes over.
This would be a short series if this duel required a second.
I love that Malfoy comes in like, you know, flexing like, oh, yeah, let's duel. Let's fight. And Harry's like, OK. And then Ron's like, I'm his second. Like Ron immediately just goes to what if death occurs?
Well, I think it was more of Malfoy was trying to say, oh, you don't even know what a duel is.
Yeah.
So Ron was trying to say, oh, we know exactly what a duel
is. Yeah. It's funny to me that Ron goes in and does that. Like, literally, you're 11. Stop. Yeah. And Ron gives Harry some good counseling that Harry's like, what if, you know, I can't make any spells or any sparks with my wand?
Just throw your wand away and punch him.
Yes. I love Ron so much. He is the ultimate friend in my eyes. He's so good. He's ride or die for Harry.
Absolutely.
It's great.
Especially if Harry dies.
Yeah.
And he's in there.
Yeah.
As a second. So when Ron says, oh, I'm Harry second, Malfoy looks at Crabbe and Goyle and chooses Crabbe.
Yeah.
So
I like to think that he like takes a second and like really looks at them and is like, yeah, Crabbe.
I wonder what kind of qualities that Crabbe has that makes him better than Goyle.
Do we get any descriptors
of the two?
Goyle is supposed to be, you know, kind of bigger and meatier. Not meatier like in the sky, but like heftier. I don't think we get good descriptions of them until Chamber of Secrets. But so I think it might just be like, well, Goyle is stupid and big and dumb. So maybe Crabbe is a little bit smarter and able to use magic.
That's a big leap from, I'm pretty sure their names have only been said so far.
It may have been completely arbitrary.
Yeah. I hope Goyle doesn't feel too bad about it.
I think he'll be fine. So Hermione overhears all of this, and Ron and Harry are so mean to her here. I have to read this exchange between them because it's hilarious, but also awful. Hermione steps in and says, I couldn't help overhearing what you and Malfoy were saying. Ron says, bet you could. Hermione continues, you mustn't go wandering around the school at night. Think of the points you'll lose Gryffindor if you're caught, and you're bound to be. And it's really very selfish of you. Harry says, and it's really none of your business. And then Ron says, goodbye. It is awful. They are so mean to her.
I mean, but you can look at that from both perspectives, because what Hermione's saying for the most part makes sense, but like, if you think of it as, oh, I really want to fight Malfoy.
Yeah, I mean, they're 11-year-old boys. But
yeah.
God.
Try talking sense to 11-year-old boys looking to fight.
I know. It's just, they're so mean to her. So then when they're leaving the common room, Hermione follows them, hissing like an angry goose and wearing a pink robe and a frown. Which is another vivid simile for...
Is she hissing yet? I feel like she's not hissing like an angry goose until later.
Yeah, when they leave the common room at night together. Yeah. Yeah. She's hissing like an angry goose. Oh, it's when they meet in the common room. Harry Ron tells her to go back to bed. He says, you go back to bed. And Harry comments internally that he's never met somebody so interfering. Oh, they're so mean to this poor girl.
But I like the setup for it of her in the like shadow chair in front of like a dying fire, mm-hmm. just like waiting in silence for them.
There is another.
If she had a lamp, she would turn it on.
There's another good scene like this. It doesn't happen till Half-Blood Prince, but there's a really funny comic about it where Hermione again like says something from a dark corner, and it's illustrated very well. But yeah, we'll get to that when we get to Half-Blood Prince, I guess. But yeah, Hermione, I feel like does this
in a
lot.
Couple years.
Like sits in a dark room, and well, at our current rate, yeah, it'll be a couple years. But I feel like she's always like sitting in a dark room waiting for like troublemakers to go by. It's really good.
Oh, let's see. Part of Hermione's argument for why they should stay is you'll lose all the points I just earned.
Yes. Yeah. She's really gloating about it. Like she manages to lecture and gloat about herself at the same time.
Yes. Very self-serving.
Yes. Yeah. So they leave the common room and they find Neville out in the hallway. Poor Neville has been stuck out here because he couldn't remember the password to get into the common room.
That happens a lot and it leads to some trouble a lot later.
Yes, but he says that Madame Pomfrey mended his arm in a minute. So he's been laying out there for hours.
How long did practice go though?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like even if it was like an afternoon class, it had to wrap up like latest 4 o'clock because they go to
start
dinner
at like
after
2:30?
That. It must have. And then for Neville to go to the hospital wing, get fixed in a minute, miss dinner apparently, and
but
just
also
be laying
miss
out here
everyone
alone.
Else coming yeah. home. What were they doing after dinner?
They probably just saw him on the ground crying and were like, there's Neville again.
Not holding the door for him.
It's really sad. But yeah, so they hook up with Neville. They have all that little thing that Joe talked about. It's so bad, but this is like a major part of the chapter that I have no notes on because it's just like, whatever. Filch comes and yells at them and they find the three-headed dog and they go back to the common room.
Well,
that's it.
The final horrible thing that Malfoy does this chapter is just tattle on them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, they're going to be out of their dorms at night because I told them to be out of their dorms at night.
Right. I wonder how he pitches that too. Like, I heard some kids are going to be walking around at night. Like, aren't they going to say, like, how do you know? What are they doing?
No, I'm sure Filch is just happy to get any leads. Like,
maybe,
oh, I can catch a kid.
Mm, yeah, okay.
I want to give out some punishment.
That would actually be a great way to distract Filch. To tell them, like, oh, those Gryffindors up on the 7th floor are going to be up to some no good. And then
Malfoy
in the dungeons.
Peeves does that a lot.
Yeah, maybe.
We get to see, I don't know if it's a soft side of Peeves or just like more chaos.
I think it's just creating chaos because he tells on where the first years are and then Filch comes and he's like, tell me where they are, Peeves. And Peeves is like, nope. And that's it. Yeah, I think it's just creating chaos and frustrating
everyone.
He
loves chaos, but yes. I don't know if he loves harassing Filch more than anything else.
I think he's just chaotic neutral. He will side with whoever.
I think it's just benefits. He's against whoever's nearby.
Sure. Yeah.
Because we know Ron tries to hit Peeves and then Peeves starts yelling. So I wonder if Peeves would have just let them keep going.
Yeah. I mean, I think perhaps he could say like, oh, they're up to no good. That is bad for Filch. So I'm going to let them keep doing what they're doing.
But he also hates everyone.
Yes.
So. Who knows?
Yeah. So Filch pursues them. They run into the room on the 3rd floor with Fluffy. We later learn that the dog is named Fluffy.
Well, we're not going to say that this chapter.
All right. Well, I already did. So it happens.
Too bad.
So it's there. So they,
you will cut
they
it
see
out.
The dog. They run back to the common room and Hermione delivers her famous, we could have been killed or worse, expelled.
But before they even run into Peeves, I think, just after they run from the trophy room, the first thing she says as she's catching her breath is, I told you so.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I like bag on Harry and Ron for being mean to Hermione, sometimes she maybe deserves it.
She's still great, but she's
It's something that I feel like gets lost in the translation from the books to the movies, that in the books, Hermione is difficult to like. At times, she is so uppity and very much like, I told you so. You shouldn't have been doing bad things. And in the movies, I think that's lost, especially as the movies go on, and Emma Watson gets older and hotter and more like it would be hard to make you hate Emma Watson. And I think they very much lean into that.
Yeah, it was hard to hate Emma Watson just like immediately. Even
yeah,
if she was like,
she's cute in the first few movies, yeah. You know? Yeah. And I think they don't lean in enough to the character's unappealing qualities.
But yeah, no, we should kind of ignore the movies.
Yeah,
for
it's
now.
Just it's something that we're talking so much about Hermione's character and how annoying she is in this chapter. Mm-hmm. So is that the chapter? Maybe we should add a section like at the end, like stray observations.
Oh, well, my last thing is, so the fat lady never rats on students.
I don't see why she would. She is,
but I don't see why she wouldn't. She kind of works for the school. Do you pay paintings? Do you paint money on it?
I don't think she is paid by the school. She just, her portrait is hung there, but she's like the representative of Gryffindor. And she's not, because McGonagall is also the representative of Gryffindor, but she's also a teacher. Whereas mm-hmm. the fat lady doesn't have that kind of obligation, I don't think. You know, to the same extent that none of the portraits really like rat on the kids.
I guess not. But I just don't know why. I feel like if you can have troublesome ghosts,
do they really care that much?
You could have troublesome paintings.
Why would
just,
they care?
Like, rats
plus,
on
she's
people.
Out. Like, she's doing other stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, when she comes back later, when she finally gets the... When
oh, yeah.
She finally lets them in.
I don't know. Is the fat lady employed by Hogwarts? That's a question for our viewers.
These are important questions.
Yes, yes. So with that, we will go into Spell of the Week.
Alohomora.
Yeah.
This is the first time it's used, and just a few brief facts about it. It's the unlocking charm, as we witness in the chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Hermione uses it to unlock the door to the forbidden third floor corridor.
Yeah. Oh, also, weird thing in this chapter, Forbidden Forest is written lowercase, which later on it becomes like a proper noun and is capitalized each time. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I didn't notice.
Uh-huh.
But you are the English teacher.
Yep.
So. Mm-hmm. There is a counter spell. So it's you use the spell on something to prevent Alohomora from working on it.
Okay.
Why wouldn't you use that on
every door, and especially one guarding a three-headed dog?
Yes.
I think they maybe just assume that Alohomora is beyond the skills of any of the students within the school.
A first year used it. I know it's Hermione, but I feel like a seventh year could use it.
I don't know. Hogwarts is weird.
Yeah. I think Dumbledore just likes chaos.
Yeah, maybe.
It's known as the thief's friend.
Mm-hmm.
It unlocks and opens doors, windows, and objects not protected by magic.
Uh-huh.
There are magic locks, but Alohomora can get through some of them. But the specific counter spell, I will read momentarily, and Cassandra will cut them
so that
they are in similar places.
Sure.
Oh, no. So I'm thinking of Kaloportus, which is the locking spell, which can be unlocked using Alohomora. So the anti-Alohomora charm is just what the spell is called to prevent Alohomora from being used on a locked thing.
So you go up to the lock and you say, anti Alohomora?
I'm going to click on the link.
There's no like incantation or anything?
Incantation is unknown.
Okay.
So we never learn the incantation for the anti Alohomora charm.
Mm, but it exists.
But we are told it exists.
Yeah.
Not in this book, though.
Maybe it's unknown by everyone who works at the school, and that's why the door isn't protected.
If Dumbledore doesn't know the anti Alohomora charm, I would be very disappointed. J.K. Rowling stated that the word Alohomora was from the West African Sikkoti figures used in geomancy and has the literal meaning friendly to thieves.
Okay.
And supposedly the wizard that brought the charm, brought the spell over to the West was named Eldon Elsrickle. And since he was the first one to use it, he terrorized London just stealing people's things.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not from Aloha.
No, it is not a Hawaiian thing.
Not Aloha. I want more of that room. So I'm going to open the door.
I'm not going to justify that with any response.
What was the guy's name again?
Eldon Elsrickle.
Eldon Elsrickle. That sounds a lot like Mr. E.E. Cummings to me, whose name is, I'm going to double check so I don't seem like a dummy. on my own podcast. My phone isn't working. I'm pretty sure his name is Edward Estlin.
Well, I guess that's similar. They both have E's.
Yep, Edward Estlin. Yeah, I don't know. I like E.E. Cummings, so.
I know.
Yeah. All right, yeah. What else about Alohomora?
From the Harry Potter wiki, this I thought was very entertaining. Before Alohomora, the most popular unlocking spell was Portoberto, which would splinter a lock from the door and would occasionally leave a smoking hole where the key should have gone.
Okay. Porta in, I think, Latin means door. So
slightly sneaky, but Alohomora leaves no trace.
Yeah.
And before that was Open Sesame.
Yes.
Which would rip the door from their hinges and tore it into firewood.
Yes. I like to imagine that you have to shout that. Like, it's not like you whisper like, Alohomora, and open the door. It's Open Sesame, and the door just explodes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So much more sneaky. That's why it's the thief's friend.
Yes. Yeah. So that's our spell of the week. And that wraps up our podcast. So you can send us, we would usually talk about emails here, but it's been a year since we released an episode.
It's been a year and we haven't gotten a single email.
Yeah, so that tells you how badly you need to send us emails. You can email us at owlpost@podtrificustotalis. That is owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com.
I hope you spelled that correct.
I did. And you can also just go to our website and click on the email us thing and you will be able to email us from there. But it's owlpost@podtrificustotalis. You can leave us a review on iTunes. That helps us out a lot because it helps our rankings and puts us higher in searches and stuff.
What does that do? What is the ranking?
Just like when somebody searches, say, Harry Potter podcast, we might be higher up in the results.
Okay, so if you want more people to listen to
us. Yeah, and if you don't want it to be as sad as it usually is when we like talk about our emails. yeah, so leave us a review if you would. That would super help us out. You can find us on the internet at podtrificustotalis.com. You can find us on social media. We're on Twitter at Podtrificus. We have a Facebook page, Podtrificus Totalis. Those are the only social network websites that I care about. We have other things, though.
I feel like we have a Tumblr.
Yeah, we have a Tumblr.
Also, Podtrificus Totalis. Pretty much everything is Podtrificus Totalis except for Twitter.
Yeah, because you can only have a handle that's so long, so it's just Podtrificus. Yeah.
Although they did just bump up how many characters you could have in a tweet.
Oh,
so
true.
Maybe they bumped up how many you could have in a handle.
They didn't. We do also have a YouTube page if you want to listen to us on there, but you can subscribe to us on really any podcast service. I was careful to try to get us on everything, although I haven't gotten us on Spotify yet, so I should get us on Spotify.
I didn't realize Spotify did the
podcasts. It's complicated on how to get your podcast on Spotify, so that's why I haven't done it yet, but we should be able to on most podcast services, and there are handy subscribe buttons on our website. I redesigned the website recently, so it's a little bit easier to use now, and that's where we are. So you can catch us next time for chapter 10,
Halloween.